My name's Chris Hedges. I'm the author with the cartoonist Joe Sacco of Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. And when Joe and I are in New York, we always listen to WBAI 99.5 or WBAI.org because we want to stay informed and not get fed the commercial lies of the corporate media.
It's been years since Enough Said Theme was on the air here, and next Wednesday overnight, I'll be catching up on years of comics history and current events, including the mainstream, independent graphic novels, and internet comic strips with Gina Donahue and Patrick Sharp, and you, as yours truly, Ken Gale, guest host for Jim Froin's science fiction show, Hour of the Wolf, this Wednesday night, Thursday morning, July 11th, from 1:30 to 3 a.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Enough said. Cyclops, angel, and Doctor Strange.
Cyclops, angel, and Doctor Strange. I wanna be like them. From the age of six, they never change. I wanna be like them.
Boy, that song really gives me the charge every time I hear it. I am Ken Gale, and Jim Froin is away this week and has asked me to guest host for him and suggested that I do an episode of Enough Said. And he knew I'd say yes. He knew very well I'd say yes. And Enough Said is a show I did here from 1993 until 2002, when the program director canceled it. But it didn't even go away then, because different producers let me do Enough Said segments on their shows, and I kept doing that somewhat frequently until 2007. And I missed the show. I missed talking about the subject matter. I was able to talk about the passing of Carmen Infantino, Silver Age comic strip, with Robert Knight just a few months ago. And so this time I'm sort of going to do the about 3 or 4 years worth of shows all at once. So we have an hour and a half, and I have two guests who are going to bring me up to date on what's going on in the entire world of comics. There's only thousands of comics that come out every month, if you include the internet and independents and the mainstream corporate comics. So my guests are...
Patrick Sharp, now that my mic is on. And Gina Donahue Sharp.
And, well, I've been friends with Gina for a while, and then I got to meet Patrick through her. And whenever we get together, they sort of catch me up a little bit on what's going on. And I love their analyses and the discussion they bring to the medium. So as soon as Jim asked me to do the show, they were the first two people I asked to come on, and here they are.
Yay,
all smiles. And okay, so what's been going on? Fill me in on the last 5 years of comics.
Where to start?
Can we start with things that are funny but not entirely awesome?
You mean funny like?
Funny like humorous that domain.
Okay.
Has DC done something stupid today.com?
There's a real website.
That is a real website hosted by theouthouse.com, basically to deal with the sheer amounts of fan outrage and consternation over the various things that have been coming out of DC over the last 2 or 3 years.
For example?
Oh, well, let's see. Today, it's only been one day since DC Comics did something stupid, and that's in relation to Ale Scott being permanently taken off of the Suicide Squad comic. I don't read it. This is news to me. But that's the sort of thing they keep everybody updated on. As soon as fans on the internet go, "What's happening? Why are they doing this?" The outhouse resets the counter on "Has DC done something stupid today.com."
You can even just, they have like a mini app for your phone's home screen that'll just show you how many days it's been since DC's done something stupid. And if you want to look up what the last thing was, you can click on it.
Do they have an archive so you
yes.
can see all the
stupid things? Like, now, you know, shooting Catwoman in the head.
She's better, by the way.
She got better. There was enough outrage.
It was fake to begin with. cheap shots, left and right. That's the kind of thing coming out.
Just kidding.
There is something about comics. People can be shot, and they're not dead. They're dying, and they got saved, and
they're
cetera,
just fine.
Although I guess the main way people get revived is a new writer takes over, and they go, "No, I don't want that character to be dead."
And they figure out a way to bring them back,
or they just ignore the fact that they were ever dead in the first place. And those of you who are not fans, who are sort of, you know, looking at us askance, I want to point out that mythology, which was religion to the people who were originally creating it, they had the same continuity problems.
Oh, yeah.
Mythology, soap operas.
Soap operas, you know.
People get brought back from the dead.
I think it's a little easier with soap operas, oddly enough.
Different actors, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't have Time Lord regeneration.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was a very clever bit on it for the Doctor Who people to, you know, "Oh, we're going to have a new actor, but we'll write that into the storyline."
Well, they had to. Their first guy died during filming. It's like, okay, well, how do we fix this?
Oh, so they didn't intend to have that regeneration?
Nope.
They weren't. Ah. Well, he didn't die, like, on set or
well,
anything,
no,
but they were in the middle of a story, and he got too sick to continue. And so they were like, well, we have this show that we're not finished doing and we're actually doing really well. Quick, let's have an awesome idea. So they had an awesome idea and they brought a new guy in.
And that's how we got Patrick Trefton.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then it worked that time, so they just kept doing it.
Now, one of the conversations that we had over the last few years is about how differently Marvel and DC treat female characters, which I thought was very interesting because that wasn't always the case. I mean, DC is the company that brought us Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Who is still an icon. And today on WBAI was a comic book show about women in comics. And though the main aspect of the show was independent comic creators in the Bronx, they're having an art exhibit up there with comic art featuring women artists in the Bronx. They talked about Wonder Woman several times in that show. So when you told me how badly DC is treating their female characters and how well Marvel is, Because often, if one treats the female characters badly, the other one does as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Patrick, fill us in.
Well, I don't know. I don't read the whole breadth and depth of Marvel Comics, but on the surface, they certainly seem to be doing a better job of at least giving the female characters a shot. I read the most the recent run of Extreme X-Men, written by Greg Pak. It was a Dazzler-led alternate universe X-Men team. And the fact that they let Dazzler headline a book after, you know,
being Dazzler
proudly branding her last comic in the 80s as "Because You Demanded It," the last issue of Dazzler, giving her a chance again is
they
amazing.
Said that
they said that
it was right on the Dazzler
because you demanded
42,
it the last issue
because you demanded it.
They said that,
and so it was really really well done, written by a man, Greg Pak, but it was. Honest to the character, and it didn't treat her like some stupid throwaway.
It was written by a fan.
Yeah.
I mean, originally she was Disco Dazzler. It shows you the
she was a gimmick character, but yeah. She was a gimmick character with a shtick that was not actually common at the time. In other words, she didn't want to be a superhero. She actually just wanted to be a pop star.
Uh-huh.
And then she kept getting dragged into things and dragged down with the X-Men as
that was always
these things
kind of
happen.
The fun part.
And then she'd always go out and try and get popular again, but, you know, that kind of got right. messed up.
But, you know, in any case, there was that. And then within the last couple of years, they've allowed Ms. Marvel, you know, MS Marvel, Carol Danvers,
binary,
to become Captain Marvel. Changed her costume, so it's now she's not, you know, in a bathing suit. She's actually in a unitard, what covers her whole self, except
but
for her
head.
There's
a black woman who was Captain Marvel at one point.
That's right. She goes by Photon now. I don't think they knew what to do with her, but she's kind of a...
At least
she
she's
shows
not
up every once in a while
retconned.
As guest stars. That's right, not dead or retconned.
She's not dead or retconned. This is already a step up from DC.
retcon is retroactive continuity. What I was mentioning that a new writer takes over and they simply change the characterization.
Change what happened.
Yeah, everything. So it's not a continuing. It's not a continuing storyline anymore.
There's no continuity anymore, or there is, but it's fake.
And because so the help me out here. The name of the woman who was the black Captain Marvel,
Monica Rambeau.
Monica Rambeau.
Oh yeah.
Steve Englehart
also
wrote
in,
her for a while and did a wonderful job.
Wasn't
with,
she was in Warren, she was in Next Men, right?
Yes, with Machine Man.
And Boom Boom.
Yeah. That poor character, Boom Boom, oh my God.
Anyway.
So,
whatever.
I will always connect characters with their writers. Mm-hmm. I'm totally oriented that way. So when I think of that Captain Marvel, I think of Steve Englehart. Who is one of my five favorite writers in the entire history of comics. And so she was very well written for a while.
Oh, yeah. And she even guest starred in, I think, two issues of this new Captain Marvel comic. They kind of had a team up.
And also what you were talking about, a fan taking over Dazzler and doing something with the character, made me think of something Alan Moore said about some of the 60s comic book characters. Who were very one-dimensional characters. And he said, one-dimensional characters are a lot more fun to write than three-dimensional characters because you get to do anything you want.
There's a lot more to fill
there
in.
Isn't, yes, there's so much more to, you can
there's
do.
There's no
because,
continuity yet. You get to make the continuity
yeah.
up.
And so he was having a ball with some of the 60s characters that he was writing in the 80s.
Well, it's sort of like what, was it Peter David who wrote She-Hulk in the 80s?
Yeah.
Who took all of these weird, thrown-away, cast-off characters from Marvel's early days, like the Blonde Phantom, and made them part of her big supporting cast. The Blonde Phantom aged while she was in comics limbo
right.
and acted as She-Hulk's legal assistant.
I do remember. I think that was Peter David, but I'm not actually sure now.
Yeah, that's... Apologies to Peter David if he's listening and I got it wrong.
It's okay. If Peter David is listening, then I'm going to do a cover of his Lord of Time.
Oh, goodness.
So he better not be.
Okay.
Anyway.
You better explain what you mean by that.
Okay. All right. Peter David wrote a filk a million years ago.
Now, Peter David is a writer who has written comic books. He's written TV. He's written
Star Trek novels.
Star Trek movie adaptation novels.
Some of the best Star Trek novels were written by Peter David.
Yeah, pretty much my favorite ones were either Peter David or Diane Duane. But he also wrote a Doctor Who filk to the tune of For the Longest Time
Billy
Joel. And it's very clever.
It's about Doctor Who.
It is about Doctor Who. I've been off regenerating. That only happens for a Lord of Time. That kind of thing. It just goes on like that forever.
Yeah, and I remember the first time I met Gina's parents, and that song somehow came up in the conversation. And my wife had the lyrics with her.
That was amazing.
Which I don't know. She doesn't always carry the lyrics of Lord of Time with her wherever she goes, but she had them with her. And she brings them out. And all of a sudden, Gina's parents and her brothers and sisters, the whole family, gets together and starts singing the Doctor Who, Peter David filk of Lord of Time with parts.
Yeah, well, we had already, like, For the Longest Time was a piece that we did it was a party piece anyway for us for a long time, so we had all the parts and all the ooh-ah-ooh-ahs were still the same. It was just the actual lyrics that were different. So
apparently your mom is listening, by the way, recording this at
home. Hi, mommy.
Now she'll be happy.
And you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. And Jim Freund is away this week, so I'm sitting in for him. I'm Ken Gale. I used to do a show called Nuff Said, where I interviewed writers and artists in comics. And this week, I'm interviewing two fans who are going to fill me in so that should I end up doing Nuff Said again, I'll know which writers and artists I should be interviewing. everybody
Kelly
out there, if you want to get on the radio, you got to be nice to Gina and Patrick.
Yes.
You got to do stuff they like, because I'm going to be going to them until I get back in touch. It is remarkably easy to get back in the swing of things.
It really is, especially if you have any kind of interest in the character. You can kind of go to the shop, pick up a comic book that you knew that person was in once, and kind of flip through it and see
whether
if you like what's happening.
Whether or not it's worth actually buying.
Well, also you can go on the internet and simply find out.
Well,
what's
sure,
going
if you
on.
Want to do it the new way.
It's well, even so, if you do it that way, you're not gonna be able to form your own opinion of what you're looking at. You're just gonna get
other people's
rantings or
good.
Yeah.
That is true.
It's like going
the internet is a big shouty box.
Yeah, it's like going to Pitchfork instead of the record store.
Well, I guess it's like finding the movie reviewer in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Back when people used to look at the newspaper for movie reviews.
Yeah.
And you find out, I tend to like this guy's reviews, so you follow that reviewer.
Yeah.
Or you go, I always exactly disagree with this reviewer, so.
So he hates it. I'll love
all
it.
All the movies he pans, they're all about me.
and if he loves it, I would never spend a dime on that movie. And so there's different ways of figuring out, you know, even with other people's opinions, you know, what to spend your time checking out or your money checking out. How much are comics these days?
Ooh, they're almost the cost of a gallon of milk. Their average comic book is $3.99 these days.
$3.99.
And that's if they don't jack up the cover price by a dollar because of a new fancy 3D cover.
Because they're doing that again.
They're doing that
because
again.
Guess who's in charge? The people who did that the first time.
Uh-huh. I remember being at at the Chicago convention when an issue of West Coast Adventures with regular version of the title, and there was a embossed hologram cover or whatever it was. Version
five
of the type,
gateway fold
for three
covers.
Or four times the price.
Yeah.
And the dealers were all talking about how Marvel did not like the number of orders they got for the expensive version. So they canceled all the orders and resolicited it only as the expensive version. Right? And the goodwill of their retailers, it cost them that decision. That decision probably cost them
thousands and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars, because retailers throughout the country were angry at Marvel and stayed angry at Marvel for a long time. And when a retailer is angry at you, they show their anger.
It's bad news.
By not ordering things for their store.
Yeah. Well, and that's sort of the fun lesson that the creators from Marvel at that time are now going through at DC this time. They've got I think it's a Villains United storyline where all of the covers are 3D covers. They've raised the price of every comic by a dollar, and they're still losing money on every issue.
How do you know they're still losing money?
Because of DC done something stupid today.com. They've done all the research. That was actually, I think a few weeks ago, was a story on that website. Not to keep hammering that website, yeah. But it's been giving me endless depths of amusement over the last month and a half or so since I found it.
And I should add that Patrick is a DC fan.
Nominally, yeah. I haven't been a fan since they threw the old universe in the trash.
Well, I guess when I say that, it's you have to like something to be that angry when they ruin it.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't care about it, then they can mess it up and it wouldn't matter.
Right.
And maybe the whole rationalization on their part is like, well, there are not enough people who matter, so who cares if we anger them?
And I will say this for DC right now. Greg Pak, who wrote Extreme X-Men with Dazzler, just started writing the new Batman/Superman comic. Last month, I believe it came out. I don't know what's going on with that story yet, but because I like the writer, I'm going to trust in him and hope that editorial doesn't tell him to do stupid things. But so for now, it's been the only comic I've been able to pick up in this new 52 and not feel immediately either disgusted or sad and put right back down.
And certainly editorial does do that. They'll hire a writer who is incredibly well known for how well they write female characters, how tight their plots are, how good their characterization is. They'll hire them from an independent company because they can pay more,
yep.
And then they will tell them, "Don't worry about the plots or characterization; just do violence in TNA."
Yeah.
And then they have a writer who is not writing to their strength, and doesn't like what they're doing, complains about it to their friends. Such as me, and that's why I'm not giving his name because he's still in the business.
Yes, we'd like him to stay that way.
And he's one of the best writers of his era, and they ordered him to do bad writing. And it's like, then why did you hire him in the first place?
Well, that's there.
I guess they wanted the cachet of hiring one of the best writers from an independent company away.
They do that. There was an I think 3 or 4 years ago now, Jody P. Colt, who's a very famous author of regular novels, was hired by DC to write a stretch of Wonder Woman comics. And she was writing sort of in an homage to the 60s when Wonder Woman had no powers and wore the white suit.
The
early 70s.
And
Diana O'Neill
cat suit,
but because
yeah.
of editorial and because she was used to a longer style of plotting and having more control over what she was writing, her run of Wonder Woman was terrible. And I don't think it was for want of, I don't think she wanted to do a bad job, mm-hmm. but it was awful.
Yeah, it's interesting bringing up the powerless Wonder Woman because they talked about that at the show this afternoon. And you can hear it on the archives. It was at 2 o'clock mm-hmm. today, from 2 to 3 o'clock. And they were really angry that they took away Wonder Woman's powers. Now, I've talked to the writer, and what he was doing was having her be her own person rather than have to rely on powers. That, anybody can do this if they had those powers. She had to do things using her own body and her own mind and her own athleticism instead of relying on superpowers.
I actually really enjoyed those stories because of that, even though on the surface
I enjoyed them because
they were
written by Danny O'Neill, was at the top of his game back then.
Acclaimed, writing Green Lantern or Green Arrow. I'm sorry, not Green
Lantern. Green Arrow.
Yeah. Batman, but on the surface, those stories look silly now through modern eyes. They look a little off sometimes, especially with tiny I Ching, old Chinese guy. Very unfortunate, but the stories are fun, and they're solid. They all kind of stand, somehow still.
And there was a WBAI producer who's a villain in one of them. I'm serious. No, Bob Fass was a villain in one of those stories.
Wow.
Because Denny O'Neill used to listen to WBAI all the time. He really loved Bob Fass. And so made him.
Made him a bad guy.
And it's funny because when I did Enough Said every week, I focused on writers and artists. I never focused on characters because to me, the character is good or bad depending on who writes and draws it. But I got so many requests to do a Wonder Woman show that my one exception,
yeah,
other than creator-owned things, was a Wonder Woman show. So I started rereading old Wonder Womans from different eras and calling up friends of mine who did them, and I happened to pick up that issue of Wonder Woman with the villain was Robert Fast, and I'm like, well, that's an interesting coincidence. Yeah. And then I Ching and Wonder Woman are storming his headquarters, and the caption says he made his millions in radio broadcasting, which is pretty funny about thinking of somebody BAI making millions. But then I realized, no, it was definitely our Bob Fass.
It's actually Bob Fass.
And so I called Denny up and said, hey, what's going on? That's how I found out he was a big Bob Fass fan. Has never met him, and is a little nervous about what he would be like. Because when you listen to the radio, everybody knows you have an image of what a person looks like.
Yeah,
based
and
on voice,
it's always wrong.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
it's amazing how it's that we have no reason to think that a person looks a certain way by their voice. Yet we are so visual as mammals that we give a picture in our head based on the voice and often get angry that the person doesn't look right. They look like themselves, but but that's not what you look like to me.
What's even more fun is when you don't even have a voice. If you communicate solely by text with someone.
Oh, right.
You know, and that's not limited to the internet. I mean, the APA. There's so many people I've never seen, never heard, and I get mental images of them.
I must be the odd man out because I really don't imagine what people who I've never seen or heard look like. It's without any kind of.
I think you're the first person I've ever met who doesn't form a picture.
Well, when all you have is text and you don't have those qualitative clues that a voice gives you, it's really hard to fill in what a person looks like.
You can
write in so many different tones, you don't
But it doesn't matter. We do it anyway.
Yeah.
And just, we're a weird species.
I must be weird.
You are. I love you. You're weird.
So let's talk about independent comics, because that's where the innovation pretty much always is. Yeah, the corporate comics, they have to give the readers what they expect, so they have to do the same thing over and over again. Otherwise, people are like, hey, that's not what Daredevil's like, and they'll get angry. And so independent comics, they have no preconceived anythings.
Is slave labor still around? Slave labor graphics?
As far as I know. But I don't know. You're the you're supposed to keep me up to date, not the other way around.
No, see, the thing is my knowledge of independent comics, other than what's web comics now, kind of stops around 2004, 2005, because that's more or less when I stopped going to the comic shop at all, because I started getting so angry at the big two.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have any other way. There's really no other way to get print independent comics unless you're ordering them directly
From the creator.
And if you don't have that information.
Unless you happen to go to a comic book convention and wander down the aisles looking for people you don't know, a comic book convention is a great way to see who else is out there, because they can buy table space just like anybody else. I just brought up a website from something called High Fructose Zombies. This was a booth that I saw, and I stopped because the girl was dressed like a punk rock Supergirl, and I immediately sort of was drawn to that as a Supergirl fan. And she was the artist on this High Fructose Zombies at a.com, and that's the website. And you can do interesting things like that with webcomics, or independent comics, I'm sorry. So, I mean, a lot of places now have even tiny little comic book conventions. You don't have to go to a San Diego or a New York. You can go to a smaller one and see who shows up, see what's there.
Well, I did check to see if ComicCon.com is still around.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to, they've been around for, you know, 20 years, and they, maybe not 20, but close to it, a virtual comic book convention, you know, with an artist alley and with comic book dealers and you know, everything that a comic book convention has, other than, you know, people dressed in costume walking around.
Well, then the great thing about that is that you can kind of wander around, see what catches your eye, kind of follow your aesthetic senses, as you were, and then stop and talk to the people who are making what drew you.
That's exactly how I used to book Yes for No Said. I walked through a convention, and I would look through their material, and if it didn't insult my intelligence, you know, I didn't have to like it per se. I just didn't have to. I just had to not be insulted. And I would talk to them to see if they could talk about their work well enough to put on the radio. And I would often offer to trade the comics that I published with theirs. And some of them wanted nothing to do. They wanted nothing to do with any other comic that was published other than their own.
Yeah.
And other people were like, oh, great, sure. You know, and they trade right away.
Well, some people are really afraid of creative cross-contamination. They don't want to expose themselves to something else because they don't want to cannibalize
it. Well, some people just don't. They feel like they're giving their comics away.
That too.
And they only want to sell their work. They don't want just anybody to read it. And other people think that having another creator read what they created is like the coolest thing in the world. And they look upon it as they're getting free comics rather than they're giving free comics.
Yeah, well, and you
so
get
it's two different attitudes.
Forth. You get the back and forth.
And
the
I find
process.
That the people who want to communicate with another creator about creating tend to make the best radio show guests.
Yes.
And it became almost a criteria I would use. And one person was just so nasty when I even suggested trading comics. I was like, ooh, okay, I don't need you to be nasty to my listeners.
Yeah.
And the person next to him was all like, yeah, great. You know, and we chatted about his comics. And so I put him on the air, and the person next to him was like, uh-oh. I made a mistake. And I sort of was trying not to look at him because I knew it. I have a yes, you did
uh-oh
expression on my face.
You messed up.
Yeah, but it's a community, and that's one of the cool things. And I think that's why I miss doing Nuff Said so much, because it's a community, and I was part of that community, and I've been part of that community for decades. And
it's very easy to just jump right back in,
and it is. And people, are, you know, if I haven't been around for a while, they're glad to see me back. And people let me know what's going on and what to check out. And, you know, they see me at a convention. How long you been here? Oh, I got here. Oh, you have to check them out over there. You know, go, you know, and they'll point to this person or that person. You know, you'd love it. And it's great because, of course, you know, you can go make a beeline right for the stuff that your friends are saying, you know, because I am not interested in comics that are just violence, violence, violence.
No, and that's sort of a big problem right now on both sides of the big two board is violence. Everything in a lot of DC just is gratuitously violent, and you can't pick up a comic without seeing internal organs splashed across a page in even like the Titans, which never used to be violent like that.
But Marvel doesn't do that.
It does. I don't tend to grab it. Like, if there's a comic book like that, I tend to put it back down.
Yeah.
And I don't, like I said, I don't read all of Marvel. I'm a little more willing to pick up a random Marvel comic and kind of flip through it because they've been bought by Disney, and their comics are
now
being
have a lot less
massively fed on for the creative process for their movies, and Disney wants the comics to kind of come close to the movies so that somebody can
see a movie, like it, and pick up the comic.
Right. Be linked in that way, which on the outside, maybe you poo-poo that because, oh, it's Disney. But
I want to see Black Widow as a Disney princess.
I don't think they're going to make an assassin a Disney princess.
Dang
but
it.
But that's what the internet is for. Internet artists make
yes,
that
but,
happen.
Wait a minute. Yes. You can make an assassin a Disney princess by retconning. It's like, she was never an assassin.
She didn't actually kill people. She just hit them enough for them to fall down.
Well, Princess Leia killed people, and now she's a Disney princess.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, right. So, yes, yeah, so Black Widow was killing people in the 60s and in the 70s. And
still does it
whatever,
today.
And all of a sudden, she will have never have done that. You just thought you read comics over the last 50 years.
Well, some of the Disney princesses have been, you know, warriors.
Yeah, but those are the Disney princesses that they tend to push to the side, like Mulan, who they don't know what to do with. It's like, no, she wasn't happy wearing her fancy princess clothes, so we can't really focus on her. or the big recent brouhaha where they were redoing Merida from Brave as this really beautified Disney princess for marketing, and everybody wigged out because she's not like that
she's
at
the
all
tomboy.
In the movies.
She's a tomboy in
the movie for sure. Uh-huh.
This girl, she's crazy girl.
Crazy and independent, and her hair's all over the place, and she's dirty, and she doesn't care.
But and so they made her a beautiful Disney princess, and everybody actually got mad, which was awesome. So
if Disney can learn, then anybody can learn. DC
oh, and Disney
looking
learned
at you.
They did.
Oh,
they
really?
Yanked that marketing.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. You think a giant corporation never, ever learns because it has so many layers to get to the top of the decision maker.
I think Disney wants to appeal to as many people as possible because then those people are buying things.
Yeah, but they have to still learn what's going on down below. And the image is the large corporations are out of touch.
Yeah. Well, if you yell enough and then you make a big enough stink about things they want to sell you and you don't buy them,
credit where credit is due. You know, they responded.
That's what you do. You don't buy, and that's how the big corporations learn.
DC might learn.
We'll see. People still buy them. I admit
that. Well, first of all, you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. If you're just tuning in and expecting Jim Freund, he'll be back next week. The Jim Freund Science Fiction Show is on every Wednesday night, technically Thursday morning, from 1:30 to 3. And I'm Ken Gale, guest hosting Hour of the Wolf for this week and doing Nuff Said, my old comic book show. And my guests are Gina Donahue and Patrick Sharp, who have been keeping me up to date somewhat.
Trying to.
Since Nuff Said ended in 2007.
Anyway,
Even though the program director canceled in 2002.
Yeah. Like I was saying, I admit to buying a gimmick DC comic because they pulled something that I was on board with when they killed Damian Wayne, the most recent Robin, Batman's son.
Thank God.
Who I never, ever, ever liked because he's the least Robin-behaving Robin that ever
he's
Robin to Robin.
Way worse than Jason Todd, gotta say.
So
that's saying a lot.
I bought the third printing of his death because I... I enjoyed that he was dead, and I admit it.
Okay. Now, let's go back to independent comics because I really do want to talk about where the innovation of the industry and the art form is. And now you mentioned a website that's or search.
Actually, if you just Google the word webcomics, one word, the top few links that I'm coming up with are topwebcomics.com, which you rank your favorite web comics. It has reviews. You can click on them.
So this is ranking of a whole bunch of people.
Yeah. Categorized.
So it's not a person's ranking.
Sort
of
like Rotten Tomatoes for web comics.
Yeah. And there's another one that's the same idea, but it's not really ranked. It's the webcomiclist.com. You can even go on Wikipedia. There's a category for web comics, and there's also a category of web comics in print on Wikipedia, which the writers and artists of those they create the content original for the web, but then if it gets popular enough, one of the things that they can market is a Dead Tree edition. and and people will buy those. I mean, I've bought them myself.
Yeah.
They make a lot of money with, you know, T-shirts and posters and merchandise mm-hmm. as well. But the fun thing about the web comics that are done comic book style is that you're getting, I actually checked because Ken had asked something about the resolution of the artwork. Mm-hmm. And in general, you're actually going to get better resolution on the web than
really?
You would from print. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you print out, say, if you opened up, I brought a couple of trades of Freak Angels in, the art in there, you can, if you look really close, you can tell that it was originally a picture. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was enlarged a little. But if you look at it on the web, if you open up the original image, it's like way bigger than a computer screen. The resolution's very high mm. online. So, I mean, you could even print out your own poster of a page. The resolution's right.
Well, I wonder
so good.
If that's a difference in the publishing bits that the different comics do, because looking at your copy of Hark, a Vagrant, collected by Kate Beaton. I'm sorry, not Upton. Beaton. you don't get that same sense because her comics online look so small, and the pictures don't seem to have been enlarged at all. They look really good on the page. So
yeah.
I think it might just depend.
It varies. But there are a lot of web comics that have gone that way. Scott McCloud actually kind of called it mm-hmm. in Reinventing Comics. He had a lot of really interesting ideas that I don't think really worked. They were definitely yesterday's tomorrow.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But he's very good at yesterday's tomorrow. So.
Well, it is interesting because I remember that book came out while Nuff Said was coming on, and the internet was quite new.
Yeah.
And one of the first internet comics was Argon Zark.
Yeah.
Which is at Zark.com. And I went to that page just to see if it's still in existence. And there aren't that many new not too much more of the story than there was last time I looked at it, which was years ago. But he is boasting that he is one of the very, very first internet-only comics to ever be done. And so he's sort of saying that he was a pioneer of doing webcomics. And whether I'm sure these other webcomics would have existed whether Argon Zark did or not.
Mm-hmm.
But he did show what you can do on the net. Because if you are reading the comic, if you move your cursor around the page, the little arrow of the cursor will turn into a hand. Because you can jump to other places from the page.
Mm-hmm. So it's like an image map.
Yeah. So he's taking advantage of things the internet can do that the printed page cannot do.
Yeah.
And of course, he did finally do a Dead Tree edition. Because people demanded it.
Yeah. What you're describing with how he set the pages up, that actually sounds pretty much exactly what Scott McCloud was going for in Reinventing Comics.
Mm.
Taking massive advantage of the ability to hyperlink, which is what cross-referencing and everything. Most of the webcomics that are available now don't do that. The closest they come is having alt text,
which is very
where
exciting.
You just hover over the comic and some comment of the writer's comes up. In a little text box,
like an annotation, or
yeah,
right.
usually like for
if
instance,
you go to XKCD
or the Non Adventures of Wonderella at nonadventures.com. Hover over the current strip, and there will be a comment.
The writer just puts a comment.
Yeah,
there.
With the published editions of Wonderella, he actually puts the alt text under the strip itself on the page, so that you still
like
get that.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
But, that's pretty common. Another thing about the formatting of current webcomics is that a lot of them are kind of strip comics. It's like they'll do a daily strip or a daily page or something like that.
Uh-huh.
But it is one story. It's one continuous story. Kind of like Prince Valiant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
So these also get collected in trades, and they're actually kind of easier for me to read that way.
Now, are all these webcomics that turn into independent graphic novels, are they self-published, or are there people who publish them for you?
I think that depends on the strip. I don't know if the Foglios publish Girl Genius themselves, but that's that seems to be professionally done. But they're both professionals, so I mean, yeah. I don't know if they pay for that out of their own pockets or I don't know.
See the Kate Beaton one there.
Yes, Gina and Patrick brought a few independent graphic novels to show me what's going on out there. And there is an awful lot that is happening in comics. The internet has made innovation easier to get out there. For many artists, they have all these great ideas and nobody to show them to. Well, with the internet, they have millions of people to show them to.
That's right. You don't have to be in the big two to get attention.
Yeah, and so that spurs people on to create because they know that people will see their creativity.
They know they're going to get an audience, yeah.
And in fact, other creators will see them. And so
suddenly... And they can do so much more interesting things. Like, just for example, Hark a Vagrant is primarily history jokes.
Huh?
Canadian history jokes, in fact.
Wow.
Yeah, but it has a ridiculously large following because the writing is so good. And it really is funny. And she makes fun of historical figures. And who doesn't like that? But that's from Drawn and Quarterly. I don't know if you've heard of them.
Yeah.
Okay. They're the ones who...
Doesn't matter if I've heard of them because other people have not. So.
Okay. Well, they're a publishing company, mm-hmm. and they're the ones that did this one, Hark a Vagrant. I'm pretty sure Warren Ellis's Freak Angels was done by Avatar.
Yep. Yes, by Avatar.
So there's a lot of creators that are complete amateurs when they're starting, and the way they get their stuff collected is by some of the pay-to-publish firms, like I think Lulu was one at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And that costs a lot of money, but if they've been running their comic on the web long enough that there's a demand for their
right.
comic in print, then they've probably also been running it with ads. Because, you know, clickable ads, like there are everywhere on the internet. That's one of the ways that these creators can make money.
Mm-hmm. And I know I don't know if it's still going, but there was a comic strip that started out at ComicCon.com that he was giving out his, you know, it was three panels a day, humor comic, not necessarily a continuing storyline, and he was giving it out for free, and anybody could put it on their webpage. And so he started getting so many people reprinting his comic that he started going to places like Coca-Cola and getting product placement money from them.
Yep.
Nice.
So suddenly his characters are drinking Coca-Cola. And it was obvious they were drinking Coca-Cola because he was getting money for them to obviously drink. Well, but there was something, he was making money off of doing something for free.
Yeah. Well, and the demand for people, like a webcomic can pick up a really big following and people, you know, are hanging on it. Somethingpositive.net, that's been running since 2001, and it got really popular, but it had an erratic update schedule because of Randy Milholland's real-life job kind of getting in the way of him creating.
How dare
and
it.
He got so frustrated with people being angry with him about not updating on time that he just kind of threw out there, if you want me to do nothing but write comics, then pay me for a year. And people did it. People threw
yes.
a year's
they
worth of money,
threw
at,
money
him,
at him.
And he actually,
it.
He did quit his job. And he writes the comic full time. So still does, as far as I know. Does
yeah.
the convention circuit.
Charles Barker did Argon Zoc, quit his
yeah.
day job too.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, Randy Milholland, specifically paid by fans of his comic strip online, to do nothing but work on the comic, which is pretty cool.
It is. So that predates, you know, a lot of the places or the Kickstarters and things like that.
Yeah.
Oh, way yeah. predates. Yeah. This is, what was the other, Sinfest? I think Sinfest started in, like, 1998, so that's not that. When did Something Positive start?
2001.
Okay. Yeah, because he was still writing Super Guy in 95, yeah. So. Okay. Netflix. Yeah.
Well, let's take a musical break. And since we've been talking about humor, I'm going to play a little bit of satire from Weird Al Yankovic.
Parker was pitiful, couldn't have been any shyer. Mary Jane still wouldn't notice him, even if his hair was on fire. But then one day he went to that science lab, that mutated spider came. La 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 da dum. Sling us a web, you're the Spider-Man. Sling us a web tonight. 'Cause we're all in the mood for a hero now, and there's evildoers to fight. Kid's a friend of his who horns in on Mary Jane. But to his great surprise, it seems she prefers guys who can kiss upside down in the rain. With great power comes great responsibility. That's the catchphrase of old Uncle Ben. If you missed it, don't worry, they'll say the line again and again. Again, oh la 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 diddy da, la la diddy da da da. Now Norman's a billionaire scientist who never had time for his son. But then something went screwy, and before you knew, he was trying to kill everyone. And he's riding around on that glider thing, and he's throwing that weird pumpkin bomb. Yes, he's wearing that dumb Power Rangers mask, but he's scarier without it on. Sling us a web tonight. 'Cause you're brave and you're strong and so limber now. But where'd you come up with those tights? It's a pretty sad day at the funeral. Norman Osborn has bitten the dust. And I heard Harry said he wants Spider-Man dead. Ah, but his buddy Pete he can trust. Oh, and MJ is all hot for Peter now. Ah, but Peter, he just shuts her down. Mary Jane, don't you cry, you can give it a try again when the sequel comes round. La la diddy da da dum.
those, of course, were the Ramones. And Sheena is a punk rocker. And Sheena was a comic character created in the 30s and by Jerry Iger. And when that song came out, Jerry, who was, you know, long past retirement age, but went to all the conventions. Most people didn't recognize him. He was so happy that the Ramones did a song about his character. He was just so happy. And I was talking to him one time about it because I was wondering, since he was an old guy, did he like the fact that there was a rock and roll? And he loved it. And then said, and I got to meet the Ramones. They're great. They've really been fans of mine.
Oh, that's so cool.
So he was all happy to have met them. It was pretty neat. And then Patrick told me something about Sheena I did not know.
She was actually the first female superhero to title her own comic book. First, Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, 1937, in the UK.
In the UK. And that was, that's a surprise.
Predates Wonder Woman by 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, I always say the first superheroine was the Red Tornado because she predated Wonder Woman by almost 2 years.
But didn't have her own comic.
She didn't have her own comic. No, she was a feature in All-American Comics. That's best known for Green Lantern. But, yeah, I should mention, while those two songs were going, Gina Donahue and Patrick Sharp here were going through the internet and just furiously looking at things and saying, oh, what about? And they're going, they each have laptops and they each, their fingers are flying.
Have internet, will travel.
Because the conversations we've been having have made them think of more things and more things and more things. And
well, it's like you want us to update you, and
that's right.
We're like, well, I don't know.
Our heads only fit so much. The internet can hold the rest of it.
There are outboard brains.
And we did get a phone call from a listener, and so if you want to call in, the number here is 212-650-5782. We can only take two calls at a time, so you'll have to wait till the other person is finished. But so, Robert, are you there?
Yes, I am, and I'm going to tell you something now maybe you guys don't know. You said Sheena was created in 1937, okay? Mm-hmm. Back in the 1950s, and I'm old enough to remember this, there was a TV series called Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, starring a woman named Irish McAuliffe.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I spoke to somebody about this, and do you know why they titled the heroine's name Sheena? Because it turns out that Sheena is Irish for Jane.
Yeah. Huh.
Sheena is the Irish way Jane of saying Jane. So you obviously realize that Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, is obviously a Tarzan wannabe.
I wouldn't say wannabe. I mean, she's a lot cooler.
Sort of an homage.
Well, it could have been an homage. I mean, but I'm thinking to myself, obviously, back in, of course, the 1950s, mm-hmm. there were several TV series featuring jungle heroes, not superheroes. There was a show called Ramar of the Jungle with John Hall of Ali Baba and the 40 Thieves fame from the 40s. He made a lot of movies with Maria Montez, et cetera, et cetera.
The 40s and 50s, even the 30s, were really a popular time for jungle theme in the comics, too. It's
Jungle Jim was on. Johnny Weissmuller in the 50s had a TV series. Well,
Jungle Jim started as part of the
Yeah,
it started as a comic strip.
It did?
Yes. Alex Raymond did it, and it was part of... what's the science fiction strip that Alex Raymond did?
Don't
I can't believe
me.
I'm blanking on this.
Internet.
One of the most influential comic strips in the history of comics. And Alex Raymond, one of the most influential artists in comics.
After Weissmuller did the famous dozen Tarzan movies, he sort of moved over...
Flash Gordon.
I was going to say.
He also did a number of films for Columbia Pictures with Johnny Weissmuller, Jungle Jim. Anyway, let me tell you.
Yeah, Jungle Jim was the topper. It was, you know, you'd have a Sunday page that was all Flash Gordon,
right.
And then a strip at either the bottom or the top, and they called it a topper, that was another strip that they were kind of trying out, and eventually it got its own, more than three panels.
Right. Now, let me tell you the reason I called, and I want to ask your guest a specific question. I'm a big fan of superheroes. I especially love Justice League, Justice League Unlimited, the whole cabal. And one of the channels that I watch regularly is The Hub. And The Hub has some interesting stuff on it. And one of the things that they recently showed is a new series called She-Zal.
Yes.
Which apparently is transgender. And I'm curious, are there any transgender comic strips?
You know, I can't name a current one off the top of my head. This does not mean they don't exist.
Has there ever been any?
Absolutely. When I was told your question off the air, I actually remembered a comic that I read in the 90s put out by Malibu. It was called Mantra, and it was about a man who was a sorcerer, and along with his buddies, every time they fell in battle, the guy above them would reincarnate them into a new body, and Mantra was about him being reincarnated into a female body.
Now, this is not Manta. This is not as in Black Manta.
No. Mantra.
Mantra.
That's interesting. I never
knew
about that.
And Camelot 3000 had somebody.
That's correct. Sir Tristan was reincarnated as a woman in Camelot 3000 and had a horrible time of it.
Now, the other area that I'm very much interested, because I used to teach this stuff, I'm a specialist in the American West, frontier history, folklore, tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious, have there been any Western comics? The reason that I mentioned that, I know, of course, about Jonah Hex.
Mm-hmm.
I actually first encountered Jonah Hex as part of the universe of Justice League when they went, there was a Batman Beyond, not Beyond, there was an animated Batman series when they were talking about Ra's al Ghul.
Yes.
And Ra's al Ghul had this episode where he talked about Arkady, his son.
That's correct.
And apparently Jonah Hex apparently was, and I don't know, was Jonah Hex a character who came from the past into the present, or was he a 19th century Western frontier superhero?
Jonah
he
Hex
was
actually
a 19th century.
Yeah.
He had come from the far future. He rode a robot horse.
Yeah,
but in the comics,
in the comics when Jonah Hex was first created in the early 70s, it was a 19th century character and only a 19th century character.
Ah.
Did he use super weapons, or did he use the usual weaponry of the 19th century?
He was the fast gun.
He was
straight up. It was your basic Western, very well written. And
he was also, in the 90s, briefly a woman.
You're kidding.
I'm not kidding. This
did
is just
travel,
for you.
Did he travel with a bunch of posse mates? There was some other characters in this Batman episode. There was an Oisha Smith. There were some other characters.
No,
that
he was only a woman in a short run on Superboy.
As far as his supporting characters in the episode, I don't know. A lot of those things that end up on TV usually come from somewhere, but I couldn't tell you for sure.
Mike Fleischer wrote Jonah Hex in the 70s, and it was probably the best writing that Mike ever did.
To your knowledge, have there been other frontier comic
heroes?
Oh
yes.
My goodness!
I want to hear about them.
In the 40s, all right. In the 40s, westerns were very, very popular, and there were a lot of western comics. And in fact,
really,
All Star Comics, which had the Justice Society in it, became All Star Western.
DC did just recently have a run of All Star Western within the last
Bat-Lash
year.
Batlash was in it.
Can I ask what the Justice Society was? Were they the Justice League in an alternate universe?
They were the Justice League of Earth 2.
Earth 2.
In the 40s, okay, remember, superheroes weren't really invented until 38. And DC was national comics back then. They became national periodical publications later. And they started putting out other characters, Batman and Wonder Woman and Green Lantern and Flash
team up
and so they figured if those books sell well with one character, think of the sales we'll get if we put all those characters in one book.
Mm.
And Gardner Fox wrote them, Sheldon May edited them, and the artist there were different chapters, and each chapter was done by the artist who did those characters in their books.
That's cool.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And remember, these are 64-page comics in those days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get 64 pages for a dime in the 40s, and they sold millions, around a million copies a month, a lot of these things. Kind Does Not Pay went to 4 million. But at any rate, but superheroes became very unpopular after World War II ended.
Wasn't it after Frederick Wortham's The Seduction of the Innocent to throw
that
away
wasn't
the superheroes?
Until the 50s.
Yeah, that was 54.
That was 53, 54, and, yeah.
Okay. The Keefe Arbor hearings were 1954, and most of the superheroes had already been canceled by then. All you really had left was Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman.
DC was contractually obligated to run Wonder Woman.
And for a brief time, there were revivals of Submariner and Captain America. Submariner had an option for a TV show, so they put out the comic.
You know what surprises me, guys, and I'll tell you again, and I go back to the late 40s and golden age of radio, early 50s television, when all the good stuff. I am very surprised that characters such as Zorro, the Lone Ranger, and I was going to ask you what you guys, if you haven't seen the new movie yet, I got a lot of quibbles with it, mostly cultural, but that's another story. I'm very surprised, unless they did and I don't know about it, that they never did comics of characters such as the Lone Ranger, Zorro, Red Rider.
Yes, they did.
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Oh, yeah, I have some Zorro comics.
Gold Key and Dell did comics like that. Dell.
I mean, heck, Marvel did Zorro.
Yeah, Dell as a company outsold. They were the number one best-selling comic book company after the Kefauver hearings, and they did Disney. They had two offices, one from the West Coast, one from the East Coast. And they did Disney and a lot of TV tie-ins from the West Coast office.
Yeah.
So almost every TV show had a comic book.
Yeah, you can bet.
So
was there one for Have a Gun, We'll Travel?
Oh, that would be funny.
Probably.
There was. There was one for Maverick. James Garner right on the cover.
How about Gunsmoke?
Gunsmoke had
Sugarfoot, Colt 45.
Oh my goodness!
I'm not sure about Sugarfoot.
Oh God, I'm telling you.
Further answer your question about the Western comics, though, yes. Marvel also had the Rawhide Kid. That was about in the, I think, 50s and 60s originally.
In the 50s.
And he had a brief resurgence with, I think, a 5-issue limited series in the early 2000s. So that should still be relatively easy to find.
Okay, I'm going to ask you one more question, and it's a tie-in.
Can I still answer part of your second question?
Sure.
Because I looked them up just for you, because I knew what the question was.
What?
There's two Western comics that are independent comics that are coming out right now.
Tell me.
Okay. They are cross-genre. One is called Rotten, and it's set in the Old West, and it's zombie hunting. It is actually fantastic. I'm not normally a fan of zombie comics, but this one is more like a... It's very specifically an Old West comic that, oh God, and zombies on top of everything else.
And what's the other one?
The other one is called Anathema. And it is a lesbian werewolf epic romance horror comic.
Oh, Lord.
But it is set in the Old West, and it is so good. Oh, my gosh.
I must tell you very quickly, and then I'll let you go because I'm sure you have others. One of my favorite authors, I'm into cross genres. I'm a big fan of steampunk, especially frontier Western steampunk, and I love the Wild Wild West, the series. I love
not
weird...
the movie.
And there was Wild Wild West comics in the 60s.
That 80-foot spider thing just didn't get me. but I have to tell you, I'm a big fan, and I'll mention an author to you, Joe R. Lansdale. Joe R. Lansdale has these wonderful crossover novels. He has a compilation of two novels, Flaming Zeppelins or Flaming London and Zeppelins West. And he brings in all kinds of characters, Mark Twain, the Island of Dr. Moreau, Frankenstein, Buffalo Bill, all these wonderful things. And I'm very, very much, and he has, as I say, all these crossover Westerns where they're hunting vampires and werewolves out in Colorado and going into mine shafts and digging up buried Indian treasures a la, Robert E. Howard, Horror in the Mound, and that sort of thing. So I love it. I just love good crossover, and I thank
Excellent.
You very much for telling me about the Western comics.
No problem.
I miss Westerns. Anyway, keep up the good. By the way, having said that, don't go see the new Lone Ranger film, guys.
The internet is full of sound and fury.
I got to tell you. I know the last 35 minutes is full of action and adventure, trains going over cliffs.
Aren't they always?
But I have to tell you, they got all kinds of things wrong. And the idea of this little boy, the Lone Ranger's nephew, calling him Mr. Tonto. And everybody was laughing at that stupid bird on his head all through the movie. And I got to tell you, listen, I remember Clayton Moore. I met him at a nostalgia convention many, many years ago. But believe me, this guy, as they said about Dan Quayle, Mr. Quayle, you are no Jack Kennedy. This new guy is no Lone Ranger. I don't care if his name is, Army Hammer, whatever his name is. Keep up the good work, guys.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for your call. 212-650-5782. 212-650-5782. And talk with our guests, Gina Donahue and Patrick Sharp. And I am Ken Gale, and I'm subbing for Jim Freund. He'll be back next week at 1:30 in the morning. And it's been a lot of fun so far, and my goodness.
Where did the time go?
Yeah, it's well over an hour has gone by already.
And we were so worried.
And
we were like, oh, my gosh, what are we going to talk about? We don't have a topic list.
Well, I knew that we had thousands of comics to talk about. So, okay, here's another phone call. Nope.
We lost them.
We lost them already.
Call back.
Well, that was
call
quick.
Back.
212-650-5782. You're on the air.
Ken, absolutely scientifically delighted that you're back on the air with the comic book show, because I'm a comic book guy. How you doing?
Sweet.
Remember I met you and I told you what I thought of the new Bond?
I went
for a bus, and it was down by the old BAI.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, you've seen me around. I've also met you talking Occupy, Walnuts at 79th Street over
there.
You
have a fan, Ken.
For a long time. Anyway, I am completely through, swear to God, through with James.
Hello? Oh, sorry about that. Call back.
What's going on?
That was a mistake on my part.
Is this Ken
He's
again?
He's still here.
Yeah.
He's still here.
Ken, I just want to ask you a quick question. I am sorry to do this. Last night I heard you do an interview with Alex Kondratiev.
Yes.
And can I ask when that was done?
That was done originally in 2008.
You scared me because I had thought he was no longer with us, and
He died May 28th, 2010.
He was a dear friend of mine. I saw him at the last Celtic League American Branch convention they held at NYU, and he was marvelous. He did a thing on Arthurian heroes, and he was just one of the great guys, and I thought, my God, where did this come from?
Okay. Yeah, he's one of the most amazing people I've ever met in my life.
He was incredible, and thank you for playing that interview.
Okay.
All right, good night.
Good night.
And so, 212-650-5782, you're on the air.
I can. I got cut off, so...
That was weird.
Thanks for calling back.
That was my mistake. Somebody had changed the settings on the phone, and I didn't realize.
Maybe you didn't like what I was going to say about James Bond.
Nope. Nothing to do with that.
Judy Dench and Xavier Bardem, who I love. Xavier Bardem is absolutely excellent in Dance with the Devil with Rosie Perez and Screaming Jay Hawkins. An incredibly crazy movie. I recommend that.
Okay.
Do you know that on sets, Dame Judy used to do cross-stitch? That was all dirty words. It was
awesome.
The best.
Yeah, obviously England has a mother fixation because I guess she's like the darling of England or something, right?
And she's awesome.
Well, she is, Academy
she's
Award winning
she's
actor.
Great, but what, James Bond every movie now? It's like
no, they killed her in the last one. She won't be back.
She was getting kind of too old.
She was
to
M, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was M.
She was M.
Sorry,
as,
spoilers.
Like, she inherited the M. She's not
or
the original M, or she was the original M, according to the
Well,
like,
actually, they retconned James Bond.
Yeah.
And it's the best retconning I think I've ever seen.
Yeah, they retconned James Bond, but they
but
kept
they did a
Judy
job.
Dench because she had been M for
well, she
Pierce
was part,
Brosnan.
She was part of the. Yeah. I think it was brilliant
Before
the way they retconned.
Off, can I say what I really didn't like about what I call the 25 year.
Oh. Did we lose him again? You're mean, Ken.
All right.
Oh, dear.
That, I don't know why that happened. 212-650-5782. And Lister will be here in less than 15 minutes.
Wow.
So let's try that again. Are you back?
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Hi, you're on WBAI.
Hello. There are two characters that you failed to mention as far as the Western.
Yeah.
Ooh.
One superhero name was Batlash.
Mm-hmm.
Gina mentioned him.
Yeah, and another character named Tomahawk.
I missed that one.
Oh, yeah,
Tomahawk,
right. That's right. Tomahawk.
There was also that other guy, Strange.
Tomahawk has
Scalp
some.
Scalp Hunter.
Tomahawk has some great writers.
Isn't Scalp Hunter a marauder?
Ed Herron and Bill Finger. There's some great writers who actually did research on the American West when they were writing Tomahawk.
Scalp Hunter from.
Very great guy. That was great to add that in.
Yeah, to take it a little further, you had another character named Turok. It was an Indian.
Didn't they make a video game out of that?
Right. So, you know, I'm just I just figured I'd add that in, you know.
No, that's
your program. I'm actually shocked that y'all back on the air. I went off the air, you know, and I'm really happy that you're back.
Well, yeah, it's funny when the program director took Nuff Set off the air in 2002. I was still on the air a lot after that because so many producers wanted me to talk about comics on their shows.
Yeah.
Really?
So yeah. So from 2002 to 2007, I popped up all over the place. You know, in the morning, in the afternoon, in the evening, on weekends, overnights.
It's a surprise, Ken.
It was amazing. It wasn't quite weekly, but it probably averaged out to biweekly. And it's funny because he canceled several of the people who gave me time on their shows. And I had to apologize.
No problem. One more character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've been reading comics since I was a kid, you know, since like the days of like EC Comics. I've been reading comics.
All right.
Okay, so there's one more series of comics. I think they were like Vampire Western. I think they were EC. I'm not sure.
Oh, I don't know. It sounds awesome. Sounds like it would sell hotcakes today.
It may have been a single story. I don't know about a series.
Possibly. It was...
Because EC didn't really do many series. They did all anthologies.
Yeah, Wade Wilson, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I remember.
Okay, well, let's get on. There's another caller waiting.
Okay.
Thanks for your call.
All right, thanks a lot.
Ken?
You're welcome, sir.
Woo-hoo.
Yep. Okay, you're back.
Okay, I just wanted to say, like you know, there was a reboot at the 25-year mark. Am I off again?
No, you're here.
You're here.
Okay. So there's a 25-year mark at Marvel that had a really weird reboot of, like, Captain America and Thor, and Captain America lost the right to be Captain America, and Thor got a beard and a weird new costume, and you know, you remember, like Iron Man did too.
Vaguely, they restart every once in a while at Marvel.
Okay,
Kirby was in a lawsuit.
You're talking about a Captain America's that are my favorite of the entire run from 41 on, because those are the ones Steve Englehart wrote that were a direct reply to Watergate.
Okay.
And because when you have a patriotic character and then you have something like Watergate going on where there is so much corruption in the federal government, you know, a writer is going to be affected by what's going on in the world when he's doing a character like that.
The 80s, not the 70s.
Would that be U.S. Agent when he briefly took over?
Okay. I thought you were going because in the 70s, Steve Rogers gave up the Captain America identity because... he found out about some of the corruption in the federal government.
Yeah.
They did not show Nixon on camera, but it was that's definitely who it was. And Englehart is even referred to it.
Yeah, no, this is he's talking about the era of Marvel Comics in the 80s where everything needed to be more like the Punisher.
Captain America
wasn't bad enough, so they replaced him with this badder dude.
Death or kill.
My one comment in, and then I'll...
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
So here's the point. It's like everything is so commercial now, I can't even stand to look at it. It's like, I even go back. It's like I want to recommend, like, this is a comic that my father used to read as a young boy. Terry and the Pirates. Have anyone ever read that?
Oh, yeah, I think they still...
Terry and the Pirates. Actually, that was my grandmother's nickname. in high school was Terry and the Pirates.
Yeah.
It's just so amazing. It's just like that kind of begat the Spirit, and the Spirit kind of begat you know, like some of the crime comics, the Mad Magazine,
the Phantom,
and DC comics.
Yeah.
And then the 50s comics. Oh, I read something. You know who Len Mollier is? If he's still around, Ken, that's somebody to really interview, because him and his brother invented 3D comics in the 50s.
3D
comics? I think
comics?
He's perfected it now. I don't know if he's even still alive. He used to be this wacky guy that used to kind of like hang out at the Met and stuff like that. He's actually married to Mo Howard's daughter, if you can believe that.
Wow.
So he hit the romantic gold mine.
3D him and his brother, who was the real genius, I hear, and he sadly passed, invented 3D comics. And so I read a whole issue of his brother did something called Iron Jaw. Have you ever heard of that kind? It was like a pre-code crime comic.
And
just like he had a jaw, and he would just like do all these evil things, and he was chased after by this teenage boy with a leather sweater and a pet monkey.
I think that was Lev Gleason.
Yeah, Lev Gleason.
Lev Gleason comics.
That was the publishing.
Sure.
But it was written and drawn by Lenny's brother, Mollier. I don't know who this Mollier is. I didn't know his name.
Oh, that's cool.
Norman Maurer?
That's really cool, too. But I also wanted to say Red Hulk and the Return of Bucky. Bucky was like the original one that always stayed dead, and they brought Bucky back.
They brought Bucky back forever ago. I will say that I didn't read Captain America comics because I thought they were boring until they made Bucky Captain America. And
same.
Those were amazing.
I loved Bucky as Cap.
Watching Bucky struggle with having been the Winter Soldier and be filling his mentor's shoes.
Is anymore, like Red Hulk. It's like, what is that, Blue Hulk? And
you know, I don't pretend to know what they're doing.
That's what I'm waiting
but
for.
Always, if you want to check back in with comics, look for something that's familiar and just kind of see where they are.
What happened to Geek and Ragman?
Brother Power the Geek.
Superheroes, you know,
Brother Power the Geek.
Yeah, Brother Power.
Yeah, the Joe Simon character.
I think the last time he showed up was in a Neil Gaiman kind of short story thing.
Yeah.
It was a little weird.
And I saw the Ragman like in a couple of cameos and a couple of like mini.
Is he the bad guy?
I don't know. No.
Ragman was a Joe Kubert character from
the 70s.
Oh,
okay. It was a 6-issue, and he was this guy that had this raggy kind of costume that got hit by lightning.
He absorbed bad guys.
Died, but they were like,
ew.
One was a championship boxer. And
yeah.
One was a dancer.
I don't know if Ragman has survived the DC reboot.
Yeah.
So
for his
it's worth
sake,
checking for.
For his sake, I hope he has not. I'm waiting for it to be over so that the characters can come back and
we'll
play.
We'll probably be waiting like 20 years.
Okay, well, we have one more call, and then we got to be out of here.
Gosh.
So,
love the show.
Thanks.
All right, thanks a lot.
It was Norman Maurer was the producer, publisher and producer for 3D Stooges.
And it's amazing. I mean, you don't know how great it makes me feel when people remember Nuff Said from years ago and have fond memories and are glad to hear it again. And so, okay, you're our last caller.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm hearing a hang-up sound.
Hi.
Hey.
Mercy.
I was just thinking about in the 50s, they had Fiction House Comics, and they had all these gals who were Janna of the Jungle and gals in costumes swinging through the trees and Tarzan sort of things.
Nyoka and Shayna the She-Devil.
Right,
and
Shayna the She-Devil. But they also had Firehair, who was a Western comic.
Nice.
Right. Firehair.
Was it a lady Western comic?
Yeah, she was a lady in a buckskin outfit.
Yeah, with red hair.
Sweet.
Awesome.
Red hair. Yeah, and she was adopted by a tribe, so she knew all these cool Indian things, and she could do stuff. She'd ride horses.
And way cooler than Roy Harper, obviously.
Oh, yeah. Arrow, right?
Poor Roy Harper, he gets no respect.
The name, like, Speedy, all I can think of is Alka-Seltzer. It's
He's Arsenal now, Mercy. Arsenal.
Arsenal, yes. Well, that's all another problem. He's got weapons. It's more of that gore. I saw I think Patrick showed me the comic with Damian Wayne.
Yes.
And I was so shocked. They made him so awful.
Well, he was horrible
like,
from the get-go.
Oh
he really
like
never stood a chance.
The love child of Bruce Wayne
and
Ra's al Ghul. And
Talia al Ghul,
like,
yeah.
Ew, you slept with that. Ew.
No, she's hot. I'm not surprised he hit it. But
evil.
No, she's always kind of been a gray area. She, you know, she loves him, but she wants him to be bad. But she loves him. So, you know, you never know. Without Ra's al Ghul dead right now, she's bad. Exactly. Exactly.
Bad girls. Fun to talk comics again.
Absolutely. It's always fun to talk comics.
Yeah.
I love you, Mercy. I also totally just got an update from our friend Will.
Will Morgan from 30th Century Comics in England.
Yeah.
Yes. And I hope he doesn't get annoyed that we're name dropping him.
Ha ha ha.
He
might be listening.
This is yeah right. It's
it's almost 8 in the morning there, so I don't know if he's up or not.
It's about DC's new 52 launch a couple of days ago a couple of years ago. For several months after the new 52 number ones, DC dominated sales everywhere, having most if not all of the top 20 sales slots, with even titles like Aquaman outselling all of Marvel's output.
Oh my God.
But 18 months after the new 52 launch, DC sales had fallen to just about what they were for equivalent titles pre-new 52. And 2 years later, they are worse. There are several DC series that they don't bother to order at all because the first response to first issues of new series is generally for the fans to take one look at the covers and back away in horror and revulsion.
That sums up my every visit to Ray and Judy's in Rockaway.
Which is terrible because they're an awesome store. But.
Yeah, but that's the DC Comics are just so bad. So bad. Except so far for Superman Batman. Greg Pak is writing it. You should read it.
And anything put out by Slave Labor Graphics is generally still good. Almost everything put out by Oni is still amazing.
They were always good.
Yeah. They've got some. They've still got some excellent artists and writers under their hood.
Dark Horse, I guess.
Dark Horse is putting out Ghost again. It's a really thoughtful Ghost detective story.
And it's being done by Kelly Sue DeConnick
and Phil Noto.
Comics has been doing some interesting stuff with gender issues and gay characters.
Absolutely. Just ask Archie George comics. Takei.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Oh, my.
Okay, well, we had better get out of here. There's years of comics to talk about and thousands of issues.
More than we can fit into an hour and a half.
You don't know how happy you've made me just remembering this show from years ago and responding to it. So I'm going to go out with a song by the 3D Invisibles about my favorite graphic novel of all time. And then we'll go out with an Ookla the Muck.
Yeah.
I am a proletarian. I am a proletarian.
The red, white, and blue spit on you.
media, trying to reach my freedom of speech and expressing myself, torching the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's off the way I see it. Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system works. Jerk, my people, the people all around the pigs work. Tell me I'm wrong, though, that's my right in this writing. The Constitution, yo, that's an illusion. Huh, suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm the lover of this flag, like many others take the same turn. Like me, they yearn for the flag too. Wake up to the lies the pigs make up. Imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call it bits cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison cause I'm busy attacking. Get the flag, I rag it and snag it and drag it and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy. So just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece up to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the message must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn.
I reach the action now. I watch you now. Follow me now. We know the money now we pack it, but the money on the topic. So we have to make a thing go on off it on a profit. Stop it. Depend on your selling. Depend on your selling. We depend on your selling. Depend on it. Them a tell me about recession, but I hustling with the band. Time is money, y'all. We now we use a second. So we depend on your selling. We depend on your selling. Depend on your selling. We depend on it. Now them some money now run on it a trickle. Yeah. Thing a come in nickel nickel. From it a move, little, little, they we call it a mickle. Every mickle make a muckle, so we a forget the mickle. Benz a buy out a bicycle. Baby pampas and buckle and nipple. Watch how we a start a wave from a ripple. Start with a single, no a double, then a triple. Every now the money now we back it, but the money on the topic. So we have to make a thing go on off it on a profit. So we depend on your selling, depend on your selling. We depend on your selling, depend on it. Them a tell me about recession, but a hustling with the band. Time is money, y'all, we now we use a second. So we depend on your selling, we depend on your selling. Depend on your selling, we depend on it. Adam say nothing now nah, go on, but we a look something fi try. No subtract, I must add, I multiply. Try off a scrap metal, try cash big gold. But who a look so tired, none pay by, eh. Never sell out, and you know, say you no lie. Now nah, get licky, licky, now nah, turn red, I be no guy. Red just up in a jacket and tie, cause you don't know where them a do fi fly. All when we know the money, now we pack it and survive.
Yo, 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 this is Dom the Raider right here, 99 8 minutes after 3 o'clock. Brand new music, first time on 99 Cinco. Lift the light, y'all. Yo, yo.
Thing I come in, nickel, nickel. From it I move, little, little, they recall it a mickle. Every mickle make a muckle, so we a forget the mickle. Benz a buy out a bicycle. Baby pampas and buckle and nipple. Watch how we a start a wave from a ripple. Start with a single, no a double, then a triple. Every now the money, now we back it, but the money
99 Cinco, it's the live right here. 212-650-5782 just for you, y'all. So we do it, y'all. 99 Cinco, flag burning time. 9 minutes after 3 o'clock, we do this until the imperialist red, white, and blue turn ashes, y'all, with no apology. 5 o'clock. Listen. Listen.
Fling out and yeah. Dash out and yeah. Back out and yeah. Flash out and yeah. When you come out, not afraid if you walk out, cause you are your one big woman.
Brand new first time on 99 Cinco. Dash out and listen live. Don't do it. Clap
out. When you come out, no rum if you walk out, cause yes, I pray any girl, man. Make come to give them some authentic style with some authentic lyrics. Authentic flow with authentic gimmicks. Authentic wine when they yell them jumping. Authentic dance, our tune select a bossy. Girl them a wine and a
yo, Esther, brand new bougie for you. I come up. Don't
let me at the lesson. Stop it, stop it. Anytime you see your girl, me want you do this, girl. Fling out and yeah. Dash out and yeah. Back out and yeah. Flash out and yeah. When you come out, not afraid if you walk out, cause yeah. You are your one big woman, you rub your keys to you. Fling out and yeah. Dash out and yeah. Back out and yeah. Flash out, girl. Yeah. When you come out, no rum if you walk out, cause you take care any girl, man, I'm the woman of the old. Hey, girl, when you are wine, me want you dash it all, boo. By tomorrow morning, you every man attack, boo. Plus, you're independent, you have your status and clue. You don't fear, figure, take a girl's post, girl. Me love the way you stand up, stand up.
You see that four legs up there.
Turn up the way you wind the selector off the hall and pull up. And the girl, them sugar, this me and a priest, now bishop, so. Fling out and yeah. Dash out and yeah. Back out and yeah. Flash out and yeah. When you come out, not afraid if you walk out, cause you are your one big woman, you rub your keys to your eyes. Fling out and yeah. Dash out and
yeah, yeah, 10 minutes after the hour, right here. 10 minutes after the hour, 3 o'clock, y'all. Brand new music right here. So we do it. Yo, Terry Wilson, this for you. Midnight Rivers, this for you. Brand new.
144 me time, we. You turn around, me sauce, me rice. go in a
mix
judge.
Me lista. Mix me.
I talk me mind.
Produce me,
no
lista. Produce
no me. No easy ficket. Me no friend cricketer. And if you feel me like sippy pies on my room, you get knock. I mean, I drink no liquor. Me no have no care, no garage, I know. I mean, no, you know, baby, say daddy, I know. Mama say, I know. Me no be low paros. So me no fool, feel waste me time because life hurts. Beg you, preserve me life, coming up. One drop out before me time, ooh, you turn around, me sons, me rise, go in a Jaja, we praise. Way, yeah, yeah. Beg you, preserve me life, coming up. One drop out before me time, ooh, you turn around, me sons, me rise, go in a Jaja, we praise. If I even a sons a day keep sorrow away, because rainy days must fade away. So all when me slide down,